Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Turn the Page podcast, and I'm thrilled to welcome back a repeat guest who is also a lecturer at the library and has a very, very cool job at the Metropolitan Opera. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Tanisha Mitchell, and I am an opera lecturer, archivist, and librarian.
Which <All three. laughs> is so cool. I mean, To have that on your bingo card is like a bingo card that no one would have ever thought of would exist.
I wouldn't have thought of it either, but it worked out the way it did, and I'm glad.
And you're also a performer.
I am a performer, too. And yes. In my lectures, sometimes I do incorporate that, you know, with the whole new COVID-19 and Zoom thing. That's been a challenge because you can't really do it live. If you do it, there's problems with like the speaker. So I'm still trying to figure that out.
And when you lecture here, I know we always ask you to sing, and usually I'm working on the second floor, front the desk when that happens. And it's it's not a bad thing. It's wonderful. It's just this really surreal experience. This quiet room suddenly becoming like ethereal, like it's almost like this beautiful vibration, and we're like, Tanisha's singing.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So we are actually here though, because even though you have done virtual lectures for us, as you've been mentioning, things have changed a lot in the world of live performance. So let's talk a little bit about that. When did everything begin to shift?
Oh, it was early March. It was around March, I would say 10th. And we heard about the COVID thing happening. But around the 10th, we were, you know, there were certain rehearsals that stopped for a moment, but we still kept going. And then March 12th, I'll never forget, it was like around 12 o'clock. And thankfully, I wasn't in the building. I did not have to be there that day. And I got the message that we were done. We were shut down completely. That's how everything happened.
It's so surreal, and I think everybody sort of had that moment of, wait, what? You know, we're used to hearing about either the swine flu or the avian flu or SARS, and you know, I don't know if pandemic is even the word for those. I mean, they spread, but not like this.
No.
So yeah.
I think this will be one of the events that we look back on, and we know exactly where we were when it happened.
For sure. I mean, I know I've mentioned several times on this podcast, prior to the library closing its doors to the public for a while everything kind of got sorted out, I had been with a bunch of other librarians in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, yes.
At PLA, the Public Library Association conference. And we started hearing about it then. And, you know, at first it was just sort of like someone would cough and you'd be like, oh, you feeling okay? And then as the weekend went on, there was a little bit more anxiety surrounding that. And then we got back and it was just this like high speed train of things changing until suddenly everything was closed.
Everything.
So let's talk about the arts and the performing arts as it stands now. I know Broadway is not slated to open until sometime next year.
Yeah, they said, I think, June or July of next year. The Opera House, oh boy. Well, what happened when we closed down and all this stuff, you know, everything went back and forth, we were told that the Met would open up again. By June, we were told that they would open up again in December, because I had quite a few lectures that were canceled. So, you know, they said, we'll open up December 31st. We knew that wasn't going to happen. And then what happened later on, a couple of weeks later, we were told that we're not opening up at all. Yeah, we were not opening up at all for the whole season. And the way that it's affected the performing arts, see, I think a lot of people, they don't realize how the opera industry, I can speak for that industry.
Yes.
What happens is there's a clause called the force majeure. And the force majeure basically says if anything happens beyond our control that causes the company to shut down, that means that we have the right not to pay you. Now, thankfully, I have not.
I'm emoting, by the way. Because this is an audio, my eyes just got really, really big, and Tanisha was reacting to that.
Right. It's like an act of God, quote unquote. So, thankfully, I haven't been affected by that. But the artists who perform, you know, they've been affected by it, and so everybody who was performing and who was set to perform at that time, their pay was shut down. They were not paid. Those who, now on the other side of it, we often think about the performers, but then you have people working in the Opera House. They, thankfully, their health insurance was paid through, and I think it's still being paid through, but they haven't been paid either. So there's been a small skeletal staff that keeps the house running, and that's for opera companies across the United States. Keeps it running, but there's a large amount of staff that they're not getting paid at all.
You know, it's something that I know I mentioned to you prior to recording today, because I have a very good friend who I'm going to tell her to listen to this episode because I am calling her out. She is in production. She's a administrator at a ballet company in San Francisco, and they tour worldwide. And when things shut down for her, she was in Europe.
And oh, boy.
Yeah, as we know, Europe began to see the rise. So yeah, so she was telling me about all of these cancellations. So, you know, it seemed serious. And I know from her that a lot of people in the arts are freelancers, and really it's just this behind the scenes work that they do to make sure everything goes the way it's supposed to go, and their lifeline has been cut off
completely. I can't speak so much for Europe, but I know the way the arts works here, they work on donations because they are not for profit. Work on the donations of people, and the Met, they were already in a perilous state before. Yes, financially. It was getting better, but COVID just changed it. Completely. And so there's so many sides. There are a lot of, and I'll tell you, there are a lot of musicians who, and especially the orchestra, they are very frustrated and angry because other orchestras throughout the United States, they've gotten a third of their pay, you know. But imagine if you don't get anything. It's a huge problem. And so it's going to be really interesting what's going to happen on the other side of this, how things are going to happen financially, because the not-for-profit model hasn't proven to be successful. Another thing that I want to bring up too, you guys probably see that, you know, opera companies are streaming operas online.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so let's say you starred in 20 operas at some of these opera companies, and I'm calling out the ones that are in this shape. You have starred in about 20 operas in a major opera company, and they're streaming these operas for free, and you're not getting paid a dime from it. You're just, you know, just
no royalties.
No royalties.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's really just the strangest world. And yes, I have thought about that because I do see a lot of it. And it's, you know, on one hand, I mean, I think the arts are extremely important. The performing arts especially, and it's good that you can show people, like, at least throw them a lifeline to that connection, but it's you know, work for the people who put on the production.
Yes You know, there are a lot of people that might say, well, why don't you find another job? And I understand that side of it. But then I understand the artist too. You know, it's on all sides. I think it's unfortunate, but I think I'm hoping that this can be used to change it for the best. And that's why I do what I do with my programs, because I know there's so many people inside, they can't get out. And also too, and I know you probably know this too, there's so much streaming out there.
Yeah.
How do you choose what to watch? I was telling my boyfriend that the other day. I said, I want to watch an opera, but I don't know which one.
Yeah.
That's
think that's pretty across the board with a lot of things, because a lot of people are, I mean, especially, you know, whether or not you're working and you're working with the public or you're working from home. You know, there was a time when you were doing everything from your couch.
Yes.
And yeah, but it is true, you know, now that nobody's really going anywhere, how do you make the decision as to what to watch, what to read? It's like, it's not just like, oh, you know, this, like, I can get tickets to this show.
Absolutely.
At this time, it's, I'm sitting on my couch and there's all of this content.
There's a lot of content, and there are organizations that are offering, offering events that you can pay a subscription to. But if you look at it, it's like, why do I have to pay a subscription to that when I can watch something similar? And I can watch it for free. So it's so much out there that I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen for the artist. I really don't. But that's why I'm very happy about what I do, because
yeah,
I try to, with what I choose, I try to curate it based on the time of the year or a certain niche within the niche. Like, for instance, Marian Anderson or Halloween at the Opera. I try to do that so that, you know, it kind of connects to what's happening now. And it's not just, oh, well, You know, there are five operas that are out there. You could go watch this and this. It's like, how does that work?
So I want to ask a question. I know I want to talk a little bit about, because we were talking earlier before the interview about residencies and pods. But before that, I just have a question for you as an archivist.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see this capsule in time? Is there anything, you know, like any type of specific preservation that you as an archivist would be sort of encapsulating?
I would say as an archivist, it would be encapsulating how it's affect the artist, because everything, what I would archive would be musically what's happening at the time. What
right.
change are we making? That is done. I think now as an archivist, it's hearing the stories and also seeing what's happening, because this is a great example. In Europe, you know, they got out of lockdown faster than the US, and they started putting on operas. And oh yes, and a lot of singers of note were infected by COVID-19. And we just found out this morning that Italy, they have shut down all concerts and operas for a whole month. So I think it's looking at it from that perspective rather than the within the theater that I think would be great to archive. If there's a way to do it, you know, from all ends of what's going on and who's been infected and the musicians that have been infected and they've passed on.
That's you know, I think that's it's dark, but it's something to archive. I mean, you have to have that there.
Yes.
So another thing I wanted to ask, I want to talk a little bit about how you stay ready for when things change back, be it gradual or not. So the aforementioned friend had told me that they are planning on a residency where the, you know, people in production and the dancers are able to have sort of like a safe space where they're almost like in their own little pod, and the dancers can practice and they could move their bodies, because obviously mm-hmm. that can fall out of shape very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I know for singers and musicians, it's a different kind of exercise, but it's still very important to stay tuned, because there will be an out of this tunnel eventually, we hope, sooner than later, but eventually and safely is the most important. How is that for opera?
Well, for opera, it's emotional, because again, you know, like a dancer, you're using your body. So you have to stay on top as far as warming up and stuff. But I know, I can say as a singer, and I've had my singer friends who felt this way, there was a time that I didn't feel like singing. When it got to March, end of March, April, May, I didn't want to sing at all. I didn't feel like it. But then when I got into June, I started to do, you know, little things and stuff. So a lot of singers, they warm up, I would say, inside. But there are a lot of singers who are not singing at all. They're just like, I don't want to deal with it. But it's warming up wherever you are and trying to stay in shape physically. I think that's the best way to do it. But emotionally, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people say, I haven't sang in weeks. I wouldn't be surprised. So I think it's warming up. It's looking at music. A lot of my friends, you know, they have certain music in the repertoire that they were learning before, you know, pre-pandemic, and they will continue to do that. But we got to look at it this way. When things go back, quote unquote, it's going to be gradual. And the audience that's attracted to opera, what the stigma is that it's an older audience. So they're not going to be as quick to come back so fast. But then on the other side, people are saying people are going to be so happy that they can get out. They're going to get out. We don't know. And when you have less performances, that means less performers would be hired to do it. And who would the opera house hire? They will hire those that people know. And yeah, those that people knew before the pandemic, those are the people that are working now, you know? And then you got to think about the ones who were trying to get their career started. Where are they going to be? There's so many factors in it. And those factors affect your voice. They do. They affect you. They affect your voice.
Yeah.
You know, the number one thing is how do you have this affect your voice in a way that it's better, that it where you produce better? That's the question. I digress.
So are there any pods or any types
yes.
of performances, even if they're not the way that you're used to doing them or public? What is going on with that?
Okay. Actually, there are two opera companies that have done something in the last 2 weeks. Michigan Opera Theater, they put on a short version of Wagner's Ring Cycle in a parking garage.
Wow.
Yeah, a multi-layered parking garage where people could drive and hear. And I think also you could tune in on your radio. So that was cool. That was in Detroit. In Atlanta, their opera season is on an old baseball field, and the operas are where each opera singer, they're in their own pod, and they're singing. And also the audience, you get to book your own pod as well. I thought that was really cool. And I think that's happening now. There are two
yeah.
operas that they're doing. The two operas, I think, one is Pagliacci and the other one is the Kaiser. The other one is not something that I don't really know much about. But yeah, you get to book your pod. I wish I could go to Atlanta to do it, but I have to quarantine when I come back. But again, that's few, far, and wide.
Yeah, it sounds like there's so many logistics that would go along with making that work safely, too.
Yes, a lot of logistics, and also in rehearsing, because
yeah.
I know a friend of mine who's in the production, she said that they have to be tested, they have to take have their temperature checked. Even in rehearsal, the rehearsals have to be careful. Where, you know, you're rehearsing distanced and also with a mask as well. I don't know if you've ever heard, there's a different mask for singers.
It
looks like, yes, I want to get one. It looks like a duck bill, but it's a mask that was created for singers where it gives you room to phonate. Yes.
Huh. Oh, that is fabulously interesting.
Cool. Yeah, I wanted to get one. I still have to see where to get it from, but yes.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
People are doing it. Mm-hmm.
I think it's very interesting because you think about iconic images from certain times. And when you think about iconic images, I mean, I think because this has come up a lot. Since March is that
yeah.
image of I don't know if you know what I'm gonna say, but the plague doctor.
Yes scary when
very
I
scary
yes it was and without realizing that was March
yeah
that was realizing with the mandates.
Yeah.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's scary when you look at it now, you know, especially with no context. The first time I saw that, I thought that that was the most terrifying thing I'd seen. But then with context, you kind of understand why, you know, then that was a physician's, for lack of a better phrase, hazmat suit back in the day, you know, like how they were able to actually see people. So, I mean, I think for myself, it's become demystified, even though it's an iconic and still a little frightening. But, you know, when you look at certain things, I wonder how much of that, you know, I mean, like, you wouldn't imagine a singer, and I don't want to associate the two because they're very different, I understand. Right. But it's also like it's an apparatus that might look a little strange, but it helps you do your job safely and be able to. So that's interesting. Yeah. That if there's a physical thing to archive, that might be one of them.
Yes, yes. I'll send you a picture of it. I was looking it up, but yeah, looks like a duck beak.
Because I've been wondering, you know, there has been so much talk about COVID and singers. Because it is like, it's, you know, everything's coming out when you're singing, and you know, but live performance, it's so important, and being able to do it is so important. And I was curious if there was any way for singers to practice with masks on. So there you go. There you have it.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Wow.
You can phonate. Yeah. If you could speak with a mask on, you could phonate with the mask on. It may not be the same, but you can do it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has just been really interesting, if not quite sad and a little depressing. but, you know, yeah, I know. It's, but it's really important to talk about.
It is. It is. And like I said, it's going to be interesting to see on the other side of this how this is going to continue, if it will become a part of our culture, because we thrive on crowds. You know, the more people you can attract in a crowd, the more profitable and the better you would be. I think in the arts, you would be embraced. You know, if somebody said this or that said artist attracted millions of people, then you're not, even if you're not into the whatever the discipline is, you're going to say, well, who is this person? Now maybe it would be, well, this person had millions of people stream their event, or millions of people watch them on IG. I think now that's going to become, I would say, not the norm, but a way of measuring, you know, how this person is being perceived by the world.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, in general, I think Zoom and streaming has become a way for people to connect, because there is no alternative. And one thing that's been very interesting lately is actors from movies doing like full cast reads of the scripts. I don't know if you've heard about that. And it's such a weird thing when you really think about it, but I went to one, quote unquote, Oh, it was great. It was great. And I was surprised how much I actually enjoyed it and felt like I was in an intimate moment. And I don't know if that's because I have not had one of those since PLA.
Yeah.
Where we were, you know, watching like Stacey Abrams give an address to librarians, and then, you know, like going one-on-one with authors and just other librarians. While I hope, and there's things in the library world too, like you doing streaming and or virtual programming. and you know, just virtual programming in libraries in general, I think there's things that are going to stay.
Yes.
For instance, virtual author visits. You can get an author from anywhere, and it could be at any time. And that's been really interesting, I know, for librarians, because it's been a new way to do programming. But at the same time, I certainly hope that as things change, the physical in person is not gone, because I think that that's important too.
It is very important. It's very important. And especially in doing my programming, the connection that you get from people, the reaction, it's more than a chat, you know, like, hey, that was great. But the connection, the conversations you have with people in person, I think that nothing can stand, can hold a candle to that. Nothing. Wow. So I think it might be both. You know, we might have both physical and virtual experiences that I've seen done on television before. Who would do it? Oprah Winfrey used to do that. And there are other places, too, where they would have the discussion with an author or a prominent guest. And then there would be people who are also streaming at the same time. And they're having a conversation with them back and forth.
Right.
So I've seen it done before, but I didn't think that it would become the norm. And maybe that will be the norm for places, especially not for profits. Yes.
Yeah, that I think that that's very possible. And I think that it adds engagement, and it takes away engagement.
Yes, it does. It does take away engagement. Yes.
And it's funny because we, you know, we've shifted a lot to social media, and they talk about engagement and social media, but it's not the same. I know that, you know, progress is made. Social media, for better or for worse, is part of our everyday lives, but it's so different. What I do like, though, is that, you know, like you can kind of have almost like a little like gallery of people chatting with each other and talking with each other about what's happening,
which is
certainly interesting. Without being rude, you can't do that in a live performance.
And also, you know, you reach beyond the local community.
Mm-hmm.
You reach beyond the local community. So that's a good thing too. I believe, but then also you lose the intimate connection with the community.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have people who know the same pizza restaurant that you go to that's right across the street.
Yeah. You know, it's, and I mean, from a library perspective, I know personally, because of some of the work I've done here at Syosset Library, we've been moving towards almost like an event space model where we do all the things that libraries have always done, but as, you know, and the ever-expanding world of libraries, we also transform our space for events at times. And I know that because librarians are not event planners, and event planning is a whole other industry that is a mess. But because librarians are not event planners, it takes us a really long time to make something happen. So whereas I would be gearing up with all the other librarians here to plan for SciCon 2021, which is our comic book convention, I've already spoken with everybody, and we've kind of all agreed that we're going to push it off to 2022, because right now we don't have what we need to do our jobs with everything going on and be planning for an event, which takes a lot of planning on everybody's part. It's like this huge group effort to get like thousands of people into the library,
right,
just to find out that we can't do it, or to risk it being a super spreader event because we're too close to being on the other side of it.
Yes, yes, yes. It's so much you have to think about now.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like that saying, I found that people were saying, those who were blessed to be doing work, et cetera, during the onslaught of this whole pandemic, it makes you more busy. You have more instructions. You're busier, even though things are shut down, quote unquote. You seem to be busier now because there's a lot more planning that you have to do.
It's another interesting thing that I know I've brought up with a few other guests recently for librarians, is that I had this horrifying moment, and I don't think it's not that horrifying, I guess, but for me I was like, wait, what? Where I kind of started to see librarians as influencers, whereas like the first time I started hearing the term influencer, I'm like, wait, that's legitimate. Like, that's a thing that people consider their jobs. But I think librarians are starting to have to embrace that.
Yes, they have to embrace coming out and saying, hey, I'm here. Mm-hmm. This is what I like. And yeah. And even nowadays, people look to the library as a place of solace and information sorting, I would say, because there's so much information out there. Yeah. You know, there's so much. I'll never forget, you know, something I was watching, and they said, a bottle of water. Who would have thought going to the store to buy a bottle of water, you would have over 20 selections of water, from spring water, distilled water, non-alkaline. This is new. I don't know what that is, but I'm learning.
Water with electrolytes.
Yeah, you know, alkaline and it's like, that's the same for, I think the library is the place where they can allow the person to sift through, they can organize it to allow people to sift and figure out what they want and what they don't want without telling them.
So that's actually a good segue back into the arts. When you're talking about so much content and how do you pick, do you think that might be a new avenue for people in the arts to sort of become almost like a curator or an influencer of opera or other performances?
I think it's a great idea. But again, you know, you got to think about the situations of everybody isn't an entrepreneur per se from that perspective. Right. I'm an orchestra player that's made a six-figure salary playing at an orchestra like the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. What they want to do is get back to that. want to get back to that. So, I think it's a great idea. I know that I've been working on doing that with my programming. I was thinking about it, and I said, you know, there's so much opera out there. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about doing it, and I'm sure that there are others that are doing it. But speaking of that, you know what a lot of people in the arts have been doing? They've been putting together podcasts, and with the podcasts, that's when they talk to other people. They curate based on the guests that they choose and what they're doing.
Excellent.
So that's what's happening a lot.
Podcasts have definitely grown out of the pandemic. Like they say, everybody has a podcast now.
Yes.
Is there anyone that you would tell people to check out?
Yes, it's Juicy Interludes with Angela. It's on this platform, Verismo Magazine. It's on Instagram.
Okay.
And she talks to opera artists, and but they don't just talk about what they're doing. They talk about who they are and how they're coping with COVID. I think that's one that I've been listening to a lot.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really hope the next time we chat, we can chat about something cheerier, maybe.
Yes.
The reopening of the Met and how the doors are flooded with people excited.
Yes. Excited.
What's the first opera you would like to either see or perform at a time like that?
I would say Verdi's Il Trovatore.
What's that about?
It's really good. It's actually in my Halloween at the Opera series. Long story short, because you know operas are long, it's about these two guys that are dueling each other over this one woman. And of course, I would be the woman that they, you know, in the opera. And one brother hates the other guy because obviously he's gone after the woman that he, you know, that he loves. But the deeper thing with that is we find out that they have the two guys hate, well, one guy hates the other guy because his mother is accused of killing the guy's brother earlier in life. You find out at the end of the opera, spoiler alert, you find out that they were brothers all along.
Oh.
They were brothers all along. And the gentleman that hated the other ended up killing his brother.
And wow.
After he killed his brother, he found out that they were actually brothers.
That's incredible. Well,
yes, it is.
I hope to see that with you as the leading lady sooner than later.
Oh, okay. From your mouth to God's ears, as they say.
And it's always a delight to speak to you, Tanisha.
Thank you. You too, Jessica. And thank you for having me on. I really have fun talking.
Anytime. All right. So once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Library. Our guest today was
Tanisha Mitchell.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.